So why should economists worry about dementia?
So I would argue probably everyone should be worrying about dementia, but economists in particular, I think, have quite a lot of reason to worry because of the massive effects it'll have on economic growth and welfare in the coming years.
Welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. While the world has been focused on the pandemic for the past 2 years, there's another global public health threat we should be preparing for.
What we've been finding is that dementia is going to sort of like vastly increase across the globe as the population age rises with increasing life expectancy, and that'll likely have pretty profound impacts on economic growth, leaving us with serious economic equity concerns as well. So my name is Nathaniel Counts. I'm Senior Vice President for Behavioral Health Innovation at Mental Health America and Clinical Assistant Professor in Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at Albert Einstein School of Medicine, and relevant to this, part of the Data for Decisions Dementia Research Team as well.
Nathaniel Counts also co-authored an article titled Dementia, Storm on the Horizon in the December edition of Finance and Development magazine. So how big is this problem on a global scale, and what countries are most affected?
So the problem of dementia is currently massive, and it will absolutely be growing in the coming years. So our projections find that as the population ages, the amount of disability caused by dementia is actually expected to triple in the next 30 years.
Wow.
And this causes it to rise from currently it's the sixth greatest contributor to disability for individuals over the age of 55, and it'll become the fifth. And so that's not to say that, in saying this, we're not saying that dementia, we should focus only on dementia and forsake other health problems. We're trying to say that it's underappreciated relative to many of the other health problems we tend to focus on. And one of the key points, too, is that it's currently a problem that's mostly concentrated in higher-income countries where the life expectancy is longest. But as the life expectancy rises globally in the next 30 years, most of the burden of disability will actually move towards middle- and lower-income countries. And of course, this will decrease welfare in a whole manner of different ways.
Mm. So dementia is something that public health has been dealing with for a long time now. But your research looks specifically, or at least this article in Finance and Development, really looks specifically at the economics of the problem. How do you measure the economic impact of, a health issue like dementia?
Broadly, there's three approaches, although all the ones that we identified in the literature tend to use the first approach, which is cost of illness. And so it's sort of the most intuitive, where you look at like how much healthcare spending there is on dementia and how much sort of like lost productivity is there for dementia, and add it all up, and then together you get a sort of like total cost. And that's one sort of approach. The next one is really focusing on lost output, like how does decreased labor force participation and productivity impact GDP growth and the extent to which there's like lost macroeconomic output. And so that's the second kind of approach that's distinguishable. And the last one focuses more on how people sort of judge, like how much is it worth to them? How much they'd be willing to pay to avoid a certain risk? So how much would they pay to avoid the kind of like morbidity and mortality associated with dementia, which is called the value of statistical life year. And that sort of is a composite of both these kind of financial monetizable costs and sort of more subjective valuations of dementia for themselves. But I think even in the cost of illness one, really what we found was existing papers can't really capture the full burden, and especially the sort of spillovers to beyond just the caregiver, but the larger family and community and society tend to get left out. And I think really when you're thinking from an economics lens, even though people in older years do have productive years, and especially like sort of non-market productive activities like taking care of children, the spillover effects are really large as people deal with the caregiving burden and the grief associated with dementia that I think has drags beyond what's easily measurable in a cost of illness approach.
And you make that point in the article, that in so many cases, women end up as the caregivers when parents or spouses get sick. What is the potential impact on women's labor force participation as dementia becomes more and more common in society, do you think?
That's a thing that really was highlighted with COVID in particular. As, you know, illness began to set in and a lot of job positions were lost, I think a lot of progress for women in the labor force was set back. And I think that shows the same sort of dynamic with dementia. As caregiving burden increases, that tends to take the largest toll on women in sort of gender unequal societies, which I suppose is all societies. So it's not only sort of like the between country inequalities, like the movement of dementia from higher income to lower income countries, but also the within country inequalities, where those with the greatest socioeconomic risk factors also are most likely to develop dementia. And then those that have the most sort of like fragile labor force connection then tend to be the most likely to disconnect as a result of caregiving burden as well.
Hmm. And so what are we doing about it, you know, in terms of investment in things like research and development compared to, say, cancer?
So, and I wouldn't want to discount the amount that's already going on. There's really, I think, quite a lot of exciting energy around dementia research and prevention and treatment and ongoing and nascent global collaborations. You know, the UN is calling this the decade of healthy aging, and I think that's really ushering in a lot of enthusiasm and exciting new collaborations. So I think in the research world, there is a good amount of investment, public investment, and increasing sort of commitments from private investors in research, and new sorts of like intergovernmental collaborations for improving clinical trial infrastructure. And then there's also a good amount of focus on prevention of dementia. I mentioned the sort of like risk factors such as education and smoking and hearing loss. And I think increasingly there's a lot of effort on healthy aging in communities that also mitigates dementia risk across different countries.
But you do mention in the article that, you know, in terms of investment, there is very little investment done in terms of, you know, clinical trials. And one of the reasons is that often these clinical trials fail. Why is that? You know, why such a bad track record for these clinical trials?
So one of the really fundamental problems is just sort of like how poorly understood the underlying disease process is. And this is really true across central nervous system disorders where, you know, even a lot of our successes are often accidents. Mm-hmm. And we don't like really necessarily understand the underlying mechanisms. Yeah. And then for areas like dementia, we like really don't, I think, have a good grasp on exactly how this works. And the sort of like implication of that is that even when we find candidate therapeutics that look like they're really going to work in animal models, it just doesn't translate as hoped to humans in many different cases. And that leads to a lot of frustration. The other part of it too is the difficulty in recruiting for clinical trials. Because it's often hard to sort of like systematically screen for early onsets, you know, early signs and symptoms of dementia, it makes it really difficult to get people at different stages into the clinical trials. And then if you're, you know, testing therapies on way more advanced dementia, then there's all sorts of challenges with getting with working with caregivers to make sure that people can fully participate in the clinical trials. So it causes, even when you do have a promising therapy, quite a lot of lag time in actually testing anything.
And it seems these trials are also more expensive than other types of trials.
Yes, the more time you spend recruiting and trying to figure out the logistics of the clinical trials, the more expensive it becomes.
So you did touch upon this a little earlier, but we can't talk about this looming health crisis without putting it in the context of the one that we're currently living. What has the COVID pandemic taught us about this type of risk?
Absolutely. So I think, you know, there's always this dream that if we all collaborate together more, maybe we'll be able to accomplish. And it's like sort of like, you know, it's always a little bit true that that would be, it would be helpful. But I think COVID firmly demonstrated exactly how much we could speed everything up when there is just this incredible amount of collaboration between the public and private sector to bring something, you know, effective therapies to people. When you start to like open up different doors and there's lots of good communication and really strong incentives that things do get done. And I don't want to say it's a perfect parallel because I think CNS and central nervous system in general is somewhat more complicated potentially than COVID and dementia in particular. I do think you could see the same amount of energy. I mean, we would just have the chance to test way more different types of therapies than we're able to test now and sort of like come to conclusions about what might be effective much quicker.
So what do we do? I mean, is there something that we can do to actually avert a full-on crisis at this point?
Absolutely. So, and when I said that things were being done before, I just didn't want to downplay the amount of, you know, incredible work that's happening across the globe. But I think the real point we make in this paper is that the amount we're doing relative to the size of the problem, and in particular, like the amount of benefit we would get from investing to avert it, is just the, you know, relative magnitude is extreme. Like, we should be investing just far more than we are currently to avert this. And so what we can do is, I mean, so one is tackling the aspects of R&D that end up really holding things up. So if you had sort of, you know, multinational investment in stronger clinical trial infrastructure that helped with recruitment and facilitated data sharing, that would really accelerate. And if you had much more spending on the basic science and development of animal models, that would really speed up drug development. And those are sort of what we call in, like, you know, health economics, like push incentives. So, you know, we create things that make it sort of easier and faster to develop drugs. On the other side too, there's pull incentives. So setting kind of like different value targets. So if you are able to develop a dementia therapy, then nations would be willing to pay quite a bit for it, I think would also be another sort of incentive that pulls along more investment from the private sector. Another really exciting idea that's been floated is this idea of developing a mega fund, which is where you, instead of having individual stakeholders sort of invest in, you know, like having a single biotech company investing in a single project, you have opportunities to sort of create a portfolio of projects that people can invest in. Because even if each individual project is quite risky and the likelihood of success isn't that high, across the entire portfolio, the chance of success might be quite good. And then it becomes a sort of like valuable asset that could both push forward the field and offer returns to investors. So that's some opportunities we think on the R&D front. But then also, I think we don't want to leave out the fact that there is already really important interventions out there for improving the quality of life of individuals with dementia and their caregivers. And those are massively underinvested in globally. And, you know, the equity issues are profound, where higher income countries have sort of like better access to care, whereas lower income countries might not have good options for people that do demonstrably improve their lives. So another part of it too is making sure that countries invest as part of their development platforms to make sure that people do have access to what works. Mm. And then the last piece is prevention. And so the ironic thing there is, you know, everyone is sort of already to some extent working on improving education and improving, decreasing the smoking rates and hearing aids, exit hearing aids, all these sorts of different things that do really work for preventing dementia. And I think appreciating the potential economic benefit of not just preventing smoking, but preventing smoking and preventing dementia, I think could also be really critical in mobilizing additional investment, both within country and across country, to make sure that people have what they need for sort of like brain health over time.
So you think, you know, obviously governments will need to invest a lot more money, but also in the private sector, and the technology associated with this type of research might open up some good investment opportunities for private investment.
And I think the other thing to think about too is the spillover effects from creating these technologies. It's not like, it seems unrealistic to think that in the process of developing some important piece of intellectual property for dementia, it wouldn't be applicable to other sorts of therapeutic areas, especially in the central nervous system space. So there could be also sort of like really exciting spillovers for both public and private entities in tackling dementia in a serious way.
Nathaniel Counts, Senior Vice President for Behavioral Health Innovation at Mental Health America. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Look for Nathaniel Count's article, Dementia Storm on the Horizon, in the December edition of Finance and Development magazine. Go to imf.org/FND or download the Finance and Development app. And look for other IMF podcasts wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow us on Twitter at @IMF_podcast. I'm Bruce Edwards. Thanks for listening.